Welcome to our follow-up edition of the unedited reviews of the DC Comics New 52. Hope you enjoy it.
Okay, so as we mentioned at the intro to the podcast, this edition of From the Racks, we continue our coverage of the New 52 from DC Comics. This time we're covering week 2, week 3, depending on how you look at it, and week 4.
We're covering 2 weeks of comics, 25 issues.
That's right, 25 issues of just pure gold, every single one of them. Brilliant.
Except for the ones that aren't.
Except for the ones that were crap. For the followers of the website as well as the podcast, you would notice in the last edition that we had, on the podcast we just had one particular person review the comic and what they thought of it, and then the rating. And then on the website itself, we had an unedited version of the full...
mind-blowing discussion.
That's right. Thank you. Basically, so we can get the podcast down, because it was horrendous. It was like 2.5 hours. It was insane. So this one's going to be relatively the same. So we're going to follow the same process. That seemed to be quite popular. And thank you very much for your feedback. So we'll do the same thing. So for the actual podcast itself, we'll just be the one person reviewing their issue. And then on the website, we'll have the full unedited...
Mind-blowing discussion.
That's right. We'll be slightly edited because I have to take out the swearing that undoubtedly will occur during Catwoman and Redwood. So, take it away, Luke, with Batman and Robin.
All right, Batman and Robin issue 1, written by Peter J. Tomasi, illustrated by Patrick Gleason. And it's, well, first of all, it's a long-awaited, you know, run by Patrick, by Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason. They did 3 issues of the previous run. Took a break to get the relaunch happening. And effectively, what this is that setting up the relationship between Bruce and Damian. As it's all about, you know, the nature of trust between Batman and his son. Damian was previously Robin to Dick Grayson's Batman, and they had a quite interesting, friendly relationship. And now it's going back to the old status quo. Damian is now finding it difficult to be with Bruce because Bruce is a lot less trusting. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. Not too bad. If you're reading the previous version of Batman and Robin, it's quite easy to pick up on the events in this as such. There's a new villain called the Nobody introduced in the opening pages, setting up what could be a quite interesting confrontation between the Dark Knight and this new villain. And overall, it's not a bad issue. A little bit more plot might have helped. I give this 3.5 clicks.
This is, well, we actually brought up a point that I think is detrimental to this comic. There's no break between the prior reboot Batman and Robin universe and this Batman and Robin universe. So it's a brand new number one for no reason at all. It even mentions the fact that events that happened previously.
You do bring up a good point, though. This is not a first issue.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is just a continuation.
Thanks for that.
Yeah. Sorry, trying to bring us back on topic.
I disagree.
Coming
at it, this is the first time I read it, and I found it easy to follow.
Excellent.
I found the story was contained in one book, and I didn't find that I had to have read anything in the past to know what was going on.
That's actually really interesting. That means that we're completely wrong.
No, we're not completely wrong.
I wouldn't say completely, because, I mean, you can't sort of grow up in this world and not have some sort of knowledge of Batman and Robin and what. So, I mean, a little bit of backstory.
The question I've got to ask you then was it's really to do with Damien. So you were able to understand who Damien was and get a sense of the relationship?
There was an moment when I realised, he's Batman's son, but I probably not having the back knowledge, I wasn't confused. I just took it for granted. Okay, Batman had a son at some point.
Which brings me back to the point that we are wrong, because I thought this book would be completely non-new reader friendly.
Yep.
But in fact, clearly the opposite is true.
It's actually probably out of the 26, probably maybe my third or fourth favorite because of that reason, because I could follow it.
Wow.
That's
well, there
brilliant.
You go. Well, despite my problems with it and its continuity, it was actually quite enjoyable. And Nobody is an interesting character. I mean, he's hunting down the Batman Incorporated characters is a pretty cool idea. Interesting to see how it goes.
Pete Tomasi is a pretty solid writer.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, Alan Moore or Frank Miller or anyone like that, but he's always crafted an interesting story and understands the universe that he's writing in and who the characters are, and Patrick Gleason's quite a nice artist.
So yes, I found it quite enjoyable, so I gave it 3 looks.
I also gave it 3.
Yeah, I think 3 looks is a good score.
Awesome. Coming up next, Crystal with Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman, Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chang. My favourite thing about this book is the front cover. I love the retro kind of design on the front cover. It's almost woodcut. I like that. Cool. Having said that, the rest of the book went downhill from there on. I have no idea what was going on in this book. Absolutely no clue. Didn't know any of the characters. They weren't really explained very well. I didn't know any character until Diana appeared. I couldn't follow the story at all. I think this is a total fail as a first issue.
Okay. That was short and sweet.
Very short and sweet.
I like it. And your rating?
And my rating is 0.5 weeks because I don't want to get a complete zero because of the cover. Also, you know, I didn't really pay much attention to the sexiness of it, but there is, you know, someone made a good point that she jumps out of bed, she's got a sheet wrapped around her, and then the next minute she's topless. Like, why? And why is the, what's her name? Zola or Lola?
Zola.
So she obviously made a great impression. Hmm. Why has she got no pants on for the whole book? And it made no sense. Who are these people? Why are they crushing through the door?
Okay.
Makes no sense at all.
I actually think you've made
a terrible book.
I think you make a very good point there. This issue is kind of a bit all over the place. It doesn't really introduce you very well to any of the characters involved. Yeah, so I agree with what you're saying in that respect. I was able to follow the story fairly well, but I didn't find any reason for why I would want to continue to follow the story. The characterization wasn't strong at all. I wasn't introduced to Diana as a lead character. Mm. She's almost incidental to the story.
I only knew who she was because of the Wonder Woman show
I'd seen as a child.
Oh yeah, I think I may have found the story easier to follow if I found it more interesting and I could concentrate on it more, but I just couldn't concentrate.
Yeah. Well, it is, yeah, like I said, it is a bit all over the place. Mm. I think the artwork in the book is fantastic.
Yeah.
I've been a very vocal opponent to the new Wonder Woman costume, but Cliff Chang draws it in such a way that it actually looks like armour, as opposed to other artist depictions of it, which have made it look like a, you know, fairly sort of ugly-looking costume. So he's given it a little bit more weight to it, which I think works well. Exactly right. There is a kind of hinted at interesting aspect to the gods in this, in that it seems to be that the gods are being presented as, well, not really, actually quite horrible individuals, which, you know, the Greek gods, if anybody's read the mythology, will realise that they are actually just not the nicest people, and they are actually very human in their godhood. But at the same time, I really was looking for an actual plot in this book, and I just didn't get a sense of that at all. This feels like it should be the first 5 pages of an issue, not a full first issue. Having said that, there are some good elements to it. I'd give it 2. I'll probably check out the second issue just to see if the story actually starts then. But it's on a thin ice at the moment for me.
All right, well, I'll be brief. I didn't have any problem following the story, but like you both said, it's just not interesting. It's just, I have no interest in it whatsoever. I did like the art. That was excellent. I also questioned why Diana bothers to wrap a sheet around her only to then just drop it anyway. And also, why is the young lady running around with no pants? It also, it's just kind of weird. I mean, it's not like it's a costume, she's just wearing her panties. I did like the depiction of Hermes. I actually thought he was, at the start, I thought he was a harpy, but then Diana then refers to him as Hermes later on, which I thought was very cool. But yeah, I agree about the costume being armor and stuff like that, but yeah, it's as a first issue, it's I wouldn't say a total fail, but it didn't. If I didn't have the backstory that I knew from Wonder Woman, then I would have been, what the hell. So yeah, I gave it 2 looks.
I don't have a lot more to add because what you guys have said, I pretty much agree with. I think the artwork, yeah, I agree with everyone. The artwork is a strong point, and it is the only reason why the story might be easy to follow. Cliff Chang's a very good storyteller.
Yeah.
Brian Azzarello, on the other hand, isn't.
No.
And he's proved that numerous times.
Time and time again.
Time and time again, and this is no exception. He's not very good with character, in spite of the fact that people say he is. He's not, because he doesn't give a few clear indications as to motivations and how that progresses the plot. in this case, Zola is just there holding a shotgun with Hermes, at Hermes. And that moment, I went, hang on, what is going on?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not
clear. Where did Hermes come from?
I didn't even know it was Hermes. I just thought it was a hillbilly.
Yeah.
A bird-footed hillbilly.
A bird-footed
Well, like I said, I thought it was a harpy coming to get it.
And it was just not that. His writing is very unclear at the best of times.
Yeah.
And boring as hell.
I was surprised at the appearance of the gods because I wasn't expecting it. I'm like, who are these people running tonight? Where did the horse people come from?
That being said, the scene where the centaurs are created is awesome.
I agree. I actually did quite like that scene. But and Azrael has said that he's going for a more horror-based approach.
Yeah.
And he certainly captures us with that scene, at least.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing more horrific than the horse head. And
yeah.
I have no problem with a more horror-oriented approach. But we've already seen, you know, Swamp Thing and Animal Man do that far better.
Yeah, with actual character and story.
Characters. Totally agree.
I give this one look purely for Cliff Chang's artwork.
Nice. Okay, moving on to Batman. We have a look.
Okay, Batman, written by Scott Snyder and illustrated by Greg Capullo. This is probably one of the more highly touted books. Snyder was a previous scribe on The Dark Knight when... he wrote Detective in its most recent incarnation before the reboot. And I've got to say, of the actual core Bat books starring Batman, this is the one to read. It sets up everything you need to know about the character. It provides you with an interesting mystery. You get a great look at Batman's supporting cast. A lot happens in the issue. It's not just, you know, here's a pretty picture that followed by another pretty picture followed by someone kicking, someone punching. The progression from panel to panel and page to page is interesting. Snyder has a great sense of who Bruce Wayne is. Going from writing Dick to suddenly writing Bruce Wayne, I had no trouble distinguishing both characters. Greg Capullo's artwork is sufficiently moody, but also manages to tell the story as well. There are some really nicely written lines of dialogue, including the closing line of the issue. This is, for me, a five-look book.
Wow. Five Lukes. Nice.
I have to agree with Luke on this book. This was, for me, the perfect example of how to do a first issue. You're introduced to Batman, his relationship to all of his supporting cast. Snyder makes it very clear who all the former Robins are. So we know that all three of them are still in play, and we know that they have the history with Batman. You get his relationship with Gordon, his relationship with Bullock. Also, you get an understanding of who Bruce Wayne is, separate from Batman, and how Bruce Wayne, he's using Wayne Corporation and the funding and everything to try and change Gotham from that side of things as well.
Yeah, it's the first one that showed a decent Bruce Wayne.
Exactly right.
And he's using an idea that the idea behind Bruce Wayne and setting up Gotham, for me, is why I had that similar idea years ago. Why has no one else had that idea as well?
I think more than anything else, this achieves a perfect balance between Batman and Bruce Wayne, between action and character moments, between detective work and, you know, broody Batman. It everything perfectly balances out. The artwork by Greg Capullo is fantastic. My only question that I would have to DC about this book is, why was this not the first Batman book released?
Yeah.
This should have been out week one, because it establishes Batman, and then I think Detective and Batman and Robin would actually then work a lot better as the follow-ups to this book as the introduction to Batman. And I'm giving it five looks as well. Like I said, perfect first issue.
All right, well, I very much like the art as well, except for the fact that Bruce and the other millionaire guy look very similar. But other than that, brilliant stuff. I mean, easy to follow. Love the Joker. Just the expressions on people's faces and the fight sequence, just very well put together. The story was excellent, and I agree with basically everything you just said. It showed Detective how it's done. Also, a great cover. So I gave it four looks.
I agree with everything everyone said. But I'd just like to reiterate the point that coming at it from a new reader's point of view, having all these different titles, the Batman, the Detective, and it's just too confusing. You don't know where it fits, why there's different characters in different books, and it doesn't make sense. And it needs to be, they need to make it clearer what No, if there's a timeline, maybe even printed on the front or something.
Hmm.
Yeah, I gave it 3.5 works.
Cool.
Awesome.
We have general consensus. Coming up next, we have Supergirl with myself. Okay, Supergirl, the... What is it, like the 5th or 6th series of attempt at a Supergirl comic? I don't know, something like that. Writers, Michael Green and Michael Johnson. And the penciler is Mahmoud Azra. Hopefully I got that right. I liked it. It's it reintroduces Supergirl into the new universe, obviously. So it's the reboot, once again, another reboot of Supergirl. It has her just coming to Earth. It's at first thinking it's all a dream, and eventually finding out the hard way that it is not a dream, and sets her up for her new attitude, which DC were very eager to say during all their promotions, that it's this is not the typical Supergirl. She doesn't like Earth, and you better get out of her way, sort of stuff. So it gives her a good reason for why she's going to be that way, because she gets attacked the minute she arrives. I like her costume. It's different to what DC originally said, where all girls were going to wear pants. So obviously they've taken away the legs, which is a kind of odd.
DC never actually said that. It was just a rumor that has already been disproved by pretty much all of the higher ups, including Jim Lee, Dan Didio, Jeff Jones.
So there you go. Don't believe the hype. Which is good. I'm glad that is the case, because it just would make them look like fools, because just about every character other than, say, Black Canary is not wearing pants. So it would just kind of look kind of weird. So basically, I guess it's meant to represent sort of upper class Kryptonian armor type stuff, ceremony type stuff. She does mention that she wasn't meant to wear it yet until her next birthday, but she snuck it on just for to have a look because it looks cool. Which is pretty good, which is, you know, like a nice little character moment. But the only thing that I didn't like about the costume is that it rides up far too high on her hips. I mean, I'm not a prude, but it just seems a bit odd, and she's meant to be quite young. The artwork is quite cool. It's easy to follow. And the bit at the end is pretty cool. I give it 3.5 looks.
I have to disagree with you on a couple of points.
Cool.
First of all, the artwork's not bad, it is easy to follow, but I felt that it was a little bit inconsistent at times. It seemed like the artist doesn't quite have his style worked out yet, and so there's kind of mishmash of styles that doesn't quite work for me overall. As I said, it's not bad artwork, and it is easy to follow, his storytelling is good, but I thought, yeah, there was just a couple of inconsistencies there. I do like the Stranger in a Strange Land approach that they're taking to Supergirl. You know, this is her first arrival.
Let's hope it's better than the novel Stranger in a Strange Land.
What?
Grok, you.
That's for another...
That's for another dust jacket. The one thing I actually didn't like was the appearance at the end. There's a character shows up at the end, without spoiling it, who I think they should have... Yeah, but I think they should have held off for a bit. I think that the Stranger in a Strange Land approach that they seem to be taking in this first issue would work better if that character didn't show up for at least a few issues.
Yes. I agree that there's a good possibility, but he would have heard her speaking Kryptonian.
It depends. For me, it depends on how they follow up the next issue.
Yeah.
But it's like, this character is here now and can just explain everything to her and have her set up, and so I think you might...
Yeah, you're right.
Might lose part of the element of what made this issue most interesting for me.
Yeah.
I did find a nice little nod when she first discovers her powers.
Yeah.
I think the discovery of her powers is an interesting scene.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
But what I did find quite a nice little nod to people who are reading the other books is that the lines that she picks up on are actually the lines from other comics when her super hearing kicks in. So I thought that was a nice touch. I'm going to give this 3 Lukes, but I'm certainly going to continue to read it.
I have to disagree with you on the point of that character showing up at the end. I think it rounded out the comic nicely. Coming at it from a new reader again, it's a good first issue because it explains the character really well, sets her up really well for the rest of the series, and I was kind of waiting for that point for her, you know, it's like kind of like a conclusion, and then you can build the rest of the story after that. I have to disagree about the costume. I agree that the pants are cut too high, given that she's meant to be a girl, not even a Kryptonian age yet. They're way too high.
I give credit to the artist, though, for not overly sexualizing her.
Yeah, at least the S-shield's not, you know, see-through or something ridiculous. Yeah.
There's no huge amount of cleavage or anything like that.
Yeah, well, in the last early days of the last reboot, she was wearing, like, a short skirt and everything. And in a lot of the early issues, there were just all these, you know, upskirt shots of her and things like that, which...
It's out of control.
Which were just ridiculous. And I'm glad that... whilst there are some elements to this costume that are clearly sexualized,
completely. So
yeah, true. But at least the artist didn't feel the need to do, you know, gratuitous butt shots or, you know.
I didn't enjoy this anywhere near as much as the rest of the group. I appreciated the fact that whilst this is yet another reboot of Supergirl, at least it makes sense. The last reboot made no sense whatsoever in the context of DC comic history at that time, whereas here. Yep, it is actually meant to be the original Supergirl, come back to Earth, completely fine with that. At least they've said it clearly what she is, or who she is.
So none of that angel stuff?
None of that angel stuff, none of the Jeff Loeb, Superman, Batman stuff, which made no sense. Which was a reboot, yet not a reboot, yet it worked, it didn't work. This is at least a reboot, but, you know, it's going right back from the start. So I know who she is, I don't need to know anything else about her. Along those lines, I agree the use of her powers, and I think Supergirl herself is handled well as a character, but I didn't like the fact that for me it felt like almost 22 pages of a fight scene. It felt very decompressed to me, and I wanted a bit more story. I give this 2 looks.
Cool, moving right along, we have Batwoman with, funnily enough, Luke.
Batwoman issue 1, written by J.H. Williams III and W. Hayden Blackman, with illustration by J.H. Williams III. This is a book I have been looking forward to for a year and a half now, ever since Rucker and Williams' run on Detective, which was cut painfully short. I have been hanging out for this book, and it has been well worth the wait. You do need to have read Detective Comics to follow it. They try and catch you up with what has happened, but really to get a sense of the character and what has happened to her, you do need to go and have read their run on Detective Comics. But this is the best looking book to date. I think there's about 4 or 5 different art styles in the book itself, and yet at no point does it look like a mess. The artwork never looks inconsistent, and yet each art style is suited to its particular part of the story. The grey wash moments for Batwoman herself, giving it a more fantastical illustrative quality, to the more sort of straight lines of the Kate Kane stuff, to the harder inks, the harder blacks of the DEO sequence. It is a beautifully, beautiful looking book, and it's a real well-written one too. A highlight for me was, that, in fact, the scene between Kate Kane and Maggie Sawyer, which is a follow-on from the Detective Comics run, and it's nice to see that they've decided to continue the burgeoning relationship between Sawyer and Kate Kane, because I was really looking forward to seeing what would become of that. I liked the hint to Montoya, because I'm a big Montoya fan, and I like... It was nice to see that there is still some feeling for her. This is a top-notch book. It has been the one, as I said, been waiting for a year and a half, and I was not disappointed at all. 4.5 looks.
Awesome. I totally agree. The artwork is magnificent. And the story is also excellent. My favourite page is the one where she's looking at the picture of Montoya on the wall, and everything else is black and white except for Montoya's portrait.
Yeah, and I think that's that whole stuff. That scene in general, I think, is just a very strong scene.
The only thing I didn't get is I don't have as much of a background in Batwoman as I did, so I actually came at this quite fresh, which I did on purpose, so I'll go back and read the Detective Comics stuff. Is that why is her skin so unbelievably white even when she's in normal civilian identity?
Because she's a bit of a socialite herself, and spends a lot more time partying and being Batwoman at night, so her skin...
Because I thought the Batwoman look, which is brilliant, was intentional, was in sort of like the porcelain, the bright red. I thought that was sort of intentional that way. So I didn't know that. So that sort of threw me a bit right at the start there. I mean, she does look awesome as Batwoman, so it's mad.
Well, she's got a bit of a goth thing happening with her fashion and everything, so she's going for that pale look anyway.
Cool. Even not reading Detective, I still got the Montoya reference, which is it was good, and it was thoroughly enjoyable and an excellent first issue.
Mm.
I mean, it's still, it wasn't slavish to the past, but was still enough to sort of give you an idea of what she's been in operation for a little bit.
Yeah.
And yeah, I quite enjoyed it, and I gave it 4.
I care about this one either way, but it didn't escape my notice that they found excuses to have the female lead characters in different states of undress. But yeah, go guys. Yeah, I'll give it maybe 2 looks. Just didn't hold my interest at all.
Well, first of all, I just want to say I think J.H. Williams III is without a doubt the best artist working at DC today. This book is absolutely blew me away on an artistic level.
Yeah.
And I wish more artists on this relaunch were pushing themselves and challenging themselves and doing more creative and interesting things with their artwork the way that Williams is.
Yeah, the front dream sequence page. Yeah. The watercolours and stuff. Yeah.
The only artist to date that I think is really pushing the boundaries like this was Trevor Foreman on Animal Man. Who has taken a similar approach, trying to do different art styles for different points in the story. But yeah, this book, it's a beautiful book to look at, and I'm just stunned every time I see J.H. Williams' artwork. He just seems to be somehow pushing it to the next level. The story, I think, was good and solid, good introduction to the character. I think you do need to know a little bit about the character before reading it, which is why I'm only going to give the book 4.5 looks. Because I don't think it's quite the perfect introduction to the character.
Uh-huh.
But it comes close.
I didn't feel that I needed to know anything before having read it.
Okay, cool. So once again, I'm wrong. This is great.
I find it very interesting that every book we love, you hate. And every book we don't like, you like.
That's cool.
It's very interesting. Just goes to show, which is...
I didn't say I hated it. I just said that
we had two.
It just didn't hold my interest.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing
none of you guys brought up the point that they found excuses to have the women in various states of undress.
But it's not that big a deal. I mean,
To take you up on that point, in a lot of the other comics, the women have actually, when that's happened, the women have been sexualized.
Yeah.
Going through this... I sitting here salivating and turning the page on its side.
Yeah,
it's not.
But
yeah, it's,
I agree,
it's more
but there's
it's
also
more
no need for it either.
Well, I mean, characters. To be fair, characters stripping down to change into costumes. You actually do get that in with the guys as well in a lot of comics.
Yeah, but there's no need for that either.
Well, no, there isn't.
I'm
but
saying
I don't mind,
there's no need for
I don't
it.
But it more humanizes them. I mean, it shows that it's not the soups. Going into the phone booth and changing sort of stuff. It's not the Wonder Woman twirling around type stuff. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that they're normal humans with no superpowers that get into their work clothes.
Mm.
I have no problem with it. I mean, Diana's made no sense because why, in terms of why cover yourself only then to be Starkers anyway? It just doesn't make any sense. Whereas they went from changing, they were just changing clothes like any normal worker.
Mm. For me, I suppose, I don't really mind it as long as it is not being done gratuitously or for titillation. It's not like, ooh, look, they're naked. Look at them getting changed. As long as they don't take that approach, then I just accept it as David said, people getting their clothes off and getting into their work clothes.
But how many normal everyday people do you see taking their clothes off and getting into their
Well, no one, but this is a bird's eye.
Well,
I do quite often, but I'm a swim teacher, so...
Yeah,
but
this is a bird's eye thing.
A lot,
not how often are you in someone's house while they're changing? Yeah.
I mean, you see it
Otherwise
a lot.
Otherwise, you would see it all the time.
You see it a lot in television shows. You see it a lot in movies.
Yeah.
And I take the same approach to those as I take to the comics. As long as it's not gratuitous or done for titillation, then I don't. I just accept it as just showing us an aspect of day to day life.
Yeah.
So I don't really
get
have
to
too
later,
much
but
of a problem.
As long as it's
here.
Not Catwoman style, it's all good.
Yeah.
Okay, so coming up next, we have Superboy. Okay, Superboy, yet again, another attempt at a Superboy series. I believe this is Series 6, written by Scott Lobdell, art by R.B. Silver. It's a similar take on the previous Superboy, where he is a genetically engineered clone, and he doesn't really have much experience with the outside world. In fact, he spends the majority of this issue in, like, a tube. It also, interestingly enough, introduces Caitlin Fairchild into the DC universe in a very fascinating way, I thought. It's gone as the Gen 13 Caitlin, and it's more the science Caitlin, which made a lot more sense, because that's what she was like in Gen 13 before she became super-powered.
Well, I'm assuming that that part will lead to Gen 13 becoming characters in the book, which makes sense because the genetic experimentation was part of their origin story as
That's right.
So tying it all together, I think...
You can only assume Gen 13 are other projects at the same facility later.
And that makes sense. It gives a good sort of unified...
I think it's pretty cool.
Unified approach to the world, which I'm always a fan of.
And also has a very interesting hint at the relationship between Caitlin and Superboy, which obviously I won't reveal here, but... the artwork is... I found it quite pedestrian. I mean, it does what it has to do. It's easy to follow. I found it maybe a little too simple. I mean, it's... I'm a child of the 80s and 90s, and so I like a few more lines. But, I mean, it does what it has to do. It's not horrible by any means. It's far better than some of the other offerings we've had in this batch. And story-wise itself, it tells you everything you need to know. I quite liked it. It establishes the character that he is and why he does what he does and gives some pretty good hints to what's going to happen in the future and how he's going to react to things. I thought it was quite good. He's an interesting character and the first Superboy I've actually been interested in. The previous Superboy was just angst, and you just wanted to slap him in the face half the time. This Superboy is quite interesting, and I'll be very interested to see him face up against Supergirl, funnily enough. I mean, the Superman confrontation, I think, is going to be pretty obvious, but him meeting Supergirl, I think, will be pretty cool, and eventually his introduction into the Teen Titans. I give this book 3.5 looks.
I actually agree with most of what you said there. I think it's actually a very good introduction to the character. It tells me everything I need to know, but more importantly, gives me a reason why I should care about the character as well. Like, I feel a certain level of interest, but also sympathy towards him. I must admit, I'm a big fan of the, you know, waking up genetic experiments first day kind of approach to storytelling. It's a personal favourite of mine. But I think... this works well as a first issue. I think the artwork was actually... I was actually quite pleasantly surprised by the artwork. I've never really encountered the artist's work before. I agree, it's no J.H. Williams. It didn't blow me away, but it was just good, solid storytelling.
The storytelling, yeah, but what I meant by pedestrian was that they all look like action figures come to life.
I didn't get that feeling at all. I think he did a very good job of making the characters distinguishable from one another and quite distinct. You know, this wasn't a David Finch style, everyone looks the same approach to artwork.
Yeah.
But more importantly, I said the story held me, the character held me.
Yep.
And yeah, look, I'll give it 3 looks.
I thought it was a good first issue, easy to follow. Story didn't particularly capture me at all, but that's just personal taste. It's just personal taste, that's all. Story itself was well written and as I say, easy to follow. Give it 3.5 loops.
Yeah, this one didn't really grab me. Like, it's not bad, but there was nothing about it that stood out or made me go, I must read more. I give this 2 loops.
Okay, coming up next we have Birds of Prey with Crystal.
Hey, Birds of Prey. I'm going to get Richo to sing the credits because they're too much of a mouthful.
I'm pretty sure it's Dwayne Swierczynski. But I could be wrong, so I apologise, Dwayne, if that's not right. And that he's the writer, and the artist is Jesus Sayers.
There you go. Okay, so Birds of Prey. Again, another one that I really didn't know what was going on. You get to the scene where there's this invisible assassin dude is getting attacked. You can see that she's trying to stop some sort of operation there, but I can't tell what it is or why. And while it's a better attempt at introducing the characters than Wonder Woman was, it still fails to say who the team are and what it is they actually do. The story wasn't clear. I thought it was a bit all over the place and none of the characters were likable. The artwork was alright. I just found that there's too much going on, too hard to follow, too much jumping back and forth in time. I give it 1 look. I think it fails as a first issue.
Fair enough. Okay, I disagree. but not strongly. I mean, I didn't find it very interesting. I'm going to give it more than one look, but I mean, I agree. I didn't think it was badly written or plotted or drawn or anything really. Nothing really stands out as terrible, but I just found that I just didn't care. No interest in the characters. I have no interest in their motivation. And I just, even the shock end at the bit at the end is sort of like, well, whatever. It's no big deal. So, I give it 2.5 looks.
I think the approach they're going for here is to make this a very action-oriented book, and that certainly comes across. It reads to me like the opening sequence of an action film.
Hmm.
My big problem with it is that there's not a lot of characterization to go with that. As you say, it doesn't really introduce the characters to you very well, and it doesn't introduce the premise of what Birds of Prey are about all that well. But first and foremost, to me, there's just not a lot of characterization here. Mm.
Which you really tell the three main characters apart.
Yeah, and that's a shame. Different. And that's a shame because I'm a big Black Canary fan, and in the previous version of Birds of Prey was very character driven. With the right balance of action, whereas this is, it's just spending all of its time trying to show us just how badass these characters are without sort of showing us what any depth or why we should be interested in them beyond, oh, look, they kick ass.
Which might work for some people, just not me.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to give it 2.5 Lukes. It wasn't that bad an issue overall. The artwork was very nice, nice, clear and simple storytelling. But, yeah, once again, just nothing to really sort of hook my, you know, hook me in and sort of grab my attention.
So that's the general thing. It's not bad. Mm. It's just not particularly good.
Yeah.
I pretty much agree with what Crystal said. I think this is a 1.5 Luke book. It's, the context of the action is very unclear. I've got no problem with opening with action and opening with a fight scene, but some context into some, for some, it doesn't have to be like, you know, pages and pages. A line saying that this is what's going on.
So like Batman.
Yeah, well, that's
Batman
right.
Opens up with a fight scene. Mm. You know exactly who everybody is, yep. Why he's doing what he's doing.
But well, the fight scene, the fight scene is there to illustrate who the character is in that aspect of his superheroic career.
Yeah.
But it also gives you everything else you need to know about the character in the issue as well, whereas Birds of Prey doesn't. It's all action-oriented.
That's right. I get nothing about Black Canary as a character. You know, you're given a scene where she meets up with the now fully healed Barbara Gordon in an attempt to link this to the previous Birds of Prey book. But even then, it was completely unnecessary. That was more for fans of the previous series to keep the continuity going.
Yeah.
But kind of unnecessary.
Well, I get the feeling that they're going to make it that Oracle was part of Birds of Prey in the new reboot version. Otherwise, that scene is pointless because
that seems to be
that universe doesn't exist anymore. Mm. So
yeah, they seem to be suggesting, and they did it in Batgirl as well. They seem to be suggesting that Batgirl was Oracle.
Oracle, yeah.
The artwork is solid and serviceable. Jesus Sayers is an okay artist. This is, but in terms of Dwayne Wierzynski's writing, this is a crime novelist trying to write comics without really any understanding about how to write crime, comics.
He doesn't quite get the medium of comics.
It might have made an okay opening chapter to a novel with the context of, you know, third-person narration getting into the other characters' heads. He's not decided to do that with captions and things like that. He's tried to let the pictures speak for themselves. The pictures don't speak for themselves because the story itself is not clear.
It's very insightful. That makes a lot of sense what you just said.
Yeah. 1.5 Lukes.
Excellent review. Moving on, next we have Suicide Squad with Richard.
Suicide Squad by Adam Glass and Federico Delaccio. I must admit I had high expectations for this book. I've always been a fan of the concept of Suicide Squad, the idea of villains in prison being given a chance to reduce their sentence or even be released by going on highly dangerous missions that no one else wants to do. It's a great premise, and in the past it's created some really fascinating political storylines. Unfortunately, this book has no storyline at all. This is effectively a 20-page torture comic. It's, here's some characters, we're going to torture them for 20 pages. We're not really going to tell you all that much about them as characters, but we'll torture them some more. Oh, and then at the end we'll say they've passed and then we'll send them on a mission. Now, this is not a story. This is not the way you introduce characters to new readers, or even the concept of what the Suicide Squad is to new readers, because you don't really get a good sense of what the Suicide Squad is about. And then, you know, this woman shows up at the end, who we're told is Amanda Waller. And she says, yes, you're going on a mission. It's just a really, really badly written comic book. I didn't get a sense for who the lead characters are. They certainly try to do that. Whilst they're being tortured, you get a little flashback to try and introduce you to the characters, but it doesn't do a very good job of that. There is one very, very good line in this book when Harlequin is being tortured. She says, "That's so cute. You think you're scary, but mister, I've seen scary, and you ain't got his smile." It's a great line. It's the only good thing about the book.
It's a bit harsh. Ready?
I'm going to give this half a Luke. It's certainly not the worst book in the relaunch, but it's really not very good.
Well, I think this is the first bit. I'm actually going to go the complete opposite to everything you just said. I really like the story. I really like the way it introduces the concept of the Suicide Squad and who these people are. I love the little mini flashbacks. I love the art. I thought the cover was excellent. I just had a lot of fun reading this comic, especially that line, which is genius. But everything else, I really, really enjoyed it. I'll definitely still keep reading this. My only disappointments were, why the hell is Amanda Waller now sexy? I mean, it's unnecessary. I mean, why? It's pointless. It's not Amanda Waller, in my opinion. I mean, they should have just kept her the way she was.
My concern with that is that they're not going to just change her look, but her personality as well.
Yeah.
And I think Amanda Waller is one of the absolute best characters in the DC universe.
Oh yeah, she just keeps just a powerful,
powerful, imposing woman who stands up to these psychopaths and villains and mass murderers and does not take any crap from them.
Not just
them,
it's like anybody. I mean, she just tells Superman just go, you know, Batman just has no fear.
Yeah,
and I just don't see this woman being the same.
Well, I'll hold off judgment because she's only in one panel at the moment.
Yeah,
so I'll hold off judgment to see where they go with that. But I do hope that they still keep the core essence of the character, even though they've changed her appearance. But my question to you would be, are you a sadist? Did you really enjoy watching people get tortured?
I'm not a fan, actually. I really despise the Saw movies and all that sort of stuff. I just thought this worked as a different sort of take. I'm very familiar with the Suicide Squad. I was a huge fan of the original Suicide Squad, and like you said, just the concept of criminals doing dangerous missions, it's just genius. But I just like the way this was put together. For me, it told me everything I needed to know. I didn't know a lot, but I know it told me everything I needed to know to understand what these characters were doing. I liked the fact that it was vapid. It didn't really tell you a lot. I mean, call me weird, but I enjoyed it a lot. So,
okay, weird.
I gave it 3.5 looks.
I totally disagree. I threw the book away in disgust. I didn't even finish it.
Thank you, Crystal. Thank you, Crystal. 100% agree.
Torture is not entertainment.
No, not at all.
Rating?
I don't give it any rating. That's a non-rating book.
Wow. Luke?
What the hell are you thinking there?
Look, I'm not making any apologies. I mean,
quite clearly you're not making any apologies.
I enjoyed it. I'm not ashamed.
Yes, but it's the... why did you enjoy it?
I don't know. I've already explained everything on why I just enjoyed it.
Because I didn't. I thought this was... I agree with everything that's been said against you. Okay, this is poorly written. It's poorly characterized. Who the hell are... The only reason I know who these are is because they look like the characters previously. I don't know if it was Deadshot, because the character looked like Deadshot. I wanted Deadshot the character, not Deadshot, you know, the icon, you know, the costume. I wanted his actual personality to show through. I wanted Floyd Lawton. I didn't get that. I got a bit of Harley Quinn, thanks to one marvelously written line. Pity that, you know, the surrounding pages and the surrounding script couldn't match up to that one very good line. Who the hell are the rest of the characters? Seriously. There's one character in there who I've... Vortlak, who the hell's he? There's another character in there who's bumped off.
Voltaic,
that's it. There's another character who's killed off, and I don't actually care that he's dead.
Yes, his name was Savant.
Savant.
But he's basically just there to get killed.
Which is fine. He's a red shirt.
Yeah. No, I agree with Luke. I have no idea who any of the characters are, and I don't care.
And I've got to make this my last point. What the hell is up with Waller? I'm going to start a campaign right now. Bring back the wall. Rebuild the wall.
Sorry, I've just got to bring up one other point, and that's the costume designs here. Now, just very briefly, I hate the new Deadshot look. Deadshot's costume was a beautiful design to begin with and didn't need...
He looks basically the same.
No, they've added all these unnecessary
extra bits. They've added a whole bunch of extra 90s just, rubbish. That's
they've
true.
Made it too busy. They've yeah. made it too busy. But yeah, secondly, okay. Harley. Once upon a time, Harlequin wore a full bodysuit and actually looked like a Harlequin. She actually had the Harlequin headpiece, a bodysuit from top to bottom, and I just think...
She doesn't look like a Harlequin. She looks like a dominatrix.
Exactly. She looks like... Yeah, she looks like she's a streetwalker or something. It's
That's because Arkham Asylum...
This goes back to something that Crystal was saying earlier, and in my response to Crystal earlier, I said, I don't mind sort of a little bit more flesh in comics if it's not gratuitous or not done for titillation. Well, Harlequin, it's all titillation. It's ridiculous. It is exactly the points that Crystal was making earlier, personified in one character, and she is front and center on the cover to the book.
I've been slammed. Okay.
The reason why the Harlequin cover looks, Harlequin costume looks like that is because that's the way that she was designed in the Arkham Asylum video game. And that was a massive hit, so they go, well, let's make it look more like that.
Well, I'm assuming that's what the Amanda Waller... I'm assuming
the costume was good before that.
I'm assuming that's what the Amanda Waller thing is as well, is let's make her look more like Angela Bassett from the Green Lantern films. The difference there is that the Green Lantern film wasn't a hit, whereas Arkham Asylum was.
I give this 0.5 of a Luke, simply for one good line.
Okay, before I get slammed any more, let's move on to... I'm not saying it was genius. It was a Dark Knight Returns.
You've made your point.
I enjoyed it.
You've made your point, and you're wrong.
Moving on to Richo and Blue Beetle.
Blue Beetle has been one of the success stories for DC in recent years. Not so much in the comic itself. The original series only lasted, I think, about 25 to 30 issues. But in cross-media, he's been popular in appearances on Smallville, on The Brave and the Bold, and a few other areas. So, yeah, you know, he's sort of expanded out into the wider DCU in the comics, being a member of the Titans and so on. So, I was a big fan of his old series. This is... an actual reboot, written by Tony Bedard and drawn by Ig Guara. But it seems like all of the previous continuity has been removed because this is an actual origin story. And look, as an origin story and as a first issue, it's solid. We're given a pretty good idea of who the character is, who the supporting cast are going to be. We're shown how he gets the scarab that gives him his powers. So, look, it's not bad. It does have the Brotherhood of Evil in it, and I'm a big fan of those guys. But at the same time, there's really nothing about this book that really stands out or blew me away. It was just good, solid, kind of there. You know, not bad, not brilliant. It just is, really. I'd call it probably middle-of-the-road storytelling. Solid, but not great. I'd give it, you know, based on that, 2.5 Lukes.
I agree with everything you said. It's it was enjoyable. It didn't blow me away. But I do respect the fact that it was an actual reboot. It was an actual real number one and disregarded all previous history. And he does look very cool. But as a character, I'm just not interested. I mean, basically, essentially, he's just a guy in an alien armor and it's been done to death. So I'm not really all interested, but I do appreciate the fact that it was a proper reboot. So I gave it 2 Lukes.
I didn't really get who Blue Beetle was, and I have to admit that wasn't really concentrating on this one. It didn't really hold my interest. My eyes tended to glaze over, so I probably missed most of the story. Yeah, I'll give it maybe 2 Lukes.
I actually agree with a lot of what's been said. Tony Bedard is not a terrible writer. He's just not the most interesting one.
He's like the Ron Howard of writers. You know, his stuff is okay, not great, not bad, just there.
And whilst I do appreciate that this is a reboot, and I like the fact that you can actually pick this up and read it without needing to have read the previous series or Infinite Crisis or Even Generation Lost, my thing then becomes, again, in the whole context of the wider reboot, how does this work in the context of, say, something like Batwoman, who was introduced in 52... which stemmed from an Infinite Crisis and then fed into, you know, things like Booster Gold, which fed into Generation Lost, which this incarnation of Blue Beetle was a huge part of. It's just not clear. I would like DC to actually reveal what stories are in and are out.
But I don't think the Blue Beetle interactions prior to the reboot were all that necessary in terms of explaining other characters.
True.
And you could take him out of the story and it wouldn't really affect anything.
True. Probably not Generation Lost, though, because Generation Lost is a big part of...
Yeah, but Generation Lost was... Let's just face it, it's just, it hasn't happened. They've wiped it. Let's be honest here. Mm. And, you know, it was a good story.
Or has it? I mean, I
think it's pretty clear that it has been wiped. Yeah.
Mm. Having said that, and I'm doing it myself, judging some of these issues based on that, but really, that's not a problem with Bedard or with this book in particular. No. That's more of an editorial thing. So.
That's right. And that's what I'm sort of critiquing the editorial side. I like Iguara's artwork. I think the costume has always looked... This version of Blue Beetle has always looked pretty good. And I think he does a really nice job. I think Iguara's storytelling is actually top stuff. I like Jamie Rees as a character. And whilst, yes, Dave, yeah, the idea has been done 100 times. At the same time, Jamie Rees is quite likeable, and he can be relatable without being substandard or just a cliche. I like the Brotherhood of Evil.
Woohoo!
Big fan of them. I give this 2.5 Lukes.
Keeping it going. Coming up next, we have Resurrection Man with Luke.
Okay. Resurrection Man was a character created in the late 90s to the early 21st century. By Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. There was a much praised run, that earlier run, but was not a huge commercial success, so it was eventually cancelled. They've decided to to bring the character back with this new...
appropriate.
They brought
the character back?
Yes, they've resurrected him.
I was waiting for that for like the last half hour.
With this new one, again, written by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning and illustrated by Fernando Dagnino. And I've got to say, it's a pretty solid book. You don't need to have read... It is another complete reboot. It does not rely on past continuity. If you're reading this correctly, that previous run has been scrapped and they are starting again. Mitch Shelley, the main character, is very interesting. I like the idea that he dies, he comes back, but when he comes back, he's got a different power. I'm also saying this not having read the original run, and I'm quite now after having read this issue, I'm quite looking forward to the reprints that they're doing in January of the original run. I like the conflict and the sort of mystery surrounding Resurrection Man. You know, he's being his soul, because no one's claimed it, is being pursued now by both the DC Universe's version of heaven and hell, but we're not being specifically told who they are and what they are on about. There is an intriguing mystery. The stakes are quite high. I think this is very nicely illustrated, and I will be certainly picking up issue 2. I give this 3.5 Lukes.
Awesome. I agree. I really, really enjoy this. In fact, out of this current batch of comics, I actually thought this was the most enjoyable issue out of all. It's equivalent to Animal Man from the last batch. I thought it's an interesting idea. The character is well thought out, well characterized. The artwork is excellent. I'm a big sucker for, you know, Christian mythology, I suppose you might call it. So, you know, the angels and the demons and going after his soul and all that sort of stuff. The scene on the plane was cool. Just overall, highly enjoyable stuff. And I was really looking forward to this, and I'm glad I wasn't disappointed. Mm. I will definitely be following this. I gave it 4.5 Lukes.
I must admit, I had no expectation on this book whatsoever. Never read the original series. Didn't really know anything about the character, and I was pleasantly surprised. This book really held my attention right from the get-go. It's beautifully illustrated. I find the lead character fascinating as a person, but I also find his powers and his situation really interesting as well. And I think this does a really good job as a first issue. Mm. Like, it introduced me, everything I need to know about Resurrection Man is there on the page. And it really not just interested me, but made me quite excited. Mm. And I'll definitely be continuing on with this one. I give it 4 Lukes.
I agree with most everything that's been said, except for some bizarre reason, I didn't get that he got a new power every time he was resurrected.
Okay.
I just completely missed that. I don't know what it was.
Sorry to interrupt you there, Crystal, but that is actually... Crystal's actually right there. It's never stated that... I know that only because...
Oh, no, I disagree. I have read the other Resurrection Man stuff, but I still got it because he does specifically say He doesn't say, hey, I wonder what I've got this time.
I want to go,
by the way, I've got theta.
But it's not demonstrated through action. And that might have, to take Crystal's point, that might have actually helped with that.
It may become more apparent in further issues. But it was an interesting story. It held my interest, but I'll give it tossing up between 3.5 and 4 Lukes. I'm not sure which.
Nice.
Go the 4. 4 is always good.
I thought it was quite good.
I just want to point out one more thing before we go on to the next one, which is that the hook for this is actually mystery.
Yeah.
Which is just nice to see someone actually, instead of hooking us with action per se, someone hooking us with questions.
Yeah.
But you know, the woman who first appeared, who he sits with in the plane, that's when I started to become interested, because she knew stuff about him that he didn't know, and there were questions around that, like how does she know,
yeah,
what does she know, and that's where it started from there. I just wanted to point that out, that
yeah,
it starts off with mystery.
Yeah, I also want to say the only reason I didn't give it 5 Lukes is because I actually didn't like the female killer team. The female psycho assassins.
Oh, the double team, whatever they were.
I found that kind of, it's just cliched. Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's been done to death. He can't talk because his mouth is gagged.
What
are
you talking about? Comics are full of cliches. Everything that comes out of anyone's mouth is a cliche.
I disagree. Otherwise, there'd be no point reading them.
They are holdovers, from what I understand, from the original series, aren't
they? Yeah, yeah, and I didn't like them for the original series either. No. But I just don't find them all that interesting.
Well, I'm willing to hold off because they're really only in a couple of pages.
Yeah.
So it's not. I'm really sort of willing to hold off on them until I see what happens when they actually make their proper appearance,
yeah,
and their interaction with Resurrection Man. But I agree, the sexy, you know, female duo killers thing is...
Well, I like the new Harley, so I got no problem with that. But it was the...
Yeah, well, let's not go on about that again.
It's just that whole, they're asking the victim questions, but he's got a gag, so clearly he can't answer. It's that whole thing just kind of annoys me. It's just been done to death, I think. No pun intended. Okay, moving on to Captain Atom with Richard.
Okay, Captain Atom, written by J.T. Krull and drawn by Freddie Williams. I have to admit that J.T. Krull wrote what I consider the worst book of week one, and that was in Green Arrow. And so I went into this one, you know, with not a lot of expectation. I am a fan of Captain Atom. I've always been a fan of the old Charlton characters. And I have to say, J.T. Krull actually surprised me with this issue. I think he's done a good job of presenting Captain Atom as an interesting character. He's facing, a dilemma that, you know, his powers are potentially killing him, which is not the most original idea. I mean, we've seen it in books like Spawn before, but what's interesting here is that it's not just that his powers are killing him, it's that his powers are, he believes his powers are making him lose his humanity and his connection to humanity. And I think that's a really interesting hook for the lead character. I also like the fact that J.T. Krull has obviously done his homework and has studied up on physics a bit. Because really, if your character is called Captain Atom and you're not trying to put it into a bit more of a scientific and physics, at least background for the stories, then I think you're really not doing your job as a writer. But I'm glad that he's grounded this in a bit of physics. I pleasantly surprised. And I think Freddie Williams' artwork is fantastic. It's a little bit different to some of the work that he's produced in the past. Not quite as exaggerated as his former work on things like JSA All-Stars. But, this book actually really sold me. I was very pleasantly surprised. J.T. Krull has done his job here, and I'm not going to pick on him too much for Green Arrow now.
You still pick on him for Green Arrow, but that was a piece of crap.
It was a piece of crap, but
rubbish, from start to finish.
Yeah, well, he's got a bit of a reputation, certainly on the online community, of being a terrible writer. And after Green Arrow, it was the first book of his I'd ever read, and I thought, yep, you know, the online community is right. But I think he's redeemed himself a bit here, and I think he's produced a good story, interesting characters. He's set up a interesting supporting cast, really nice artwork. There's probably a little bit too much exposition in a couple of the scenes, especially the scene where Captain Atom is talking to Professor Magala. But overall, I liked this, and I'm going to give it 3.5 Lukes.
Cool. I basically agree. I mean, I also... I like the art mainly for the Captain Atom scenes. I thought they were quite well done. He's just very, very well realised, I thought. I mean, he just looks cool. He comes, bounces off the page. There were a couple of panels where I thought the art failed. Basically, the page where you first get to see Dr. Magala or whatever his name is. I just found that kind of pointless, and I just didn't really like it the way it was done. Too much exposition, you're right. And yeah, the idea of the powers killing him has been done to death, I agree, but it's pretty cool. I mean, I've always liked Captain Atom as a character. DC have tried hard to push for him to be a major leaguer. He had that horrendous Wildstorm crossover.
Oh, that was terrible.
Oh, it's just terrible. But I mean, they've made a lot of effort to make him a major player, and it looks like in this he might be. I do also quite like the countdown that seems to be happening. It's only on a couple of the pages, not on every page, but essentially every time Captain Atom is in action, there's a weird sort of countdown effect happening. 250, 10, 52, 31. I'm not too sure. It's not explained what that means. I'm not too sure exactly what it means. It's maybe how long he's got to go until he dissipates completely, maybe.
Well, that's how I interpreted it.
But it's interesting, I think.
Yeah, I interpreted the countdown that way because it occurs, you know, when he's in action.
Yeah, that's right.
So obviously he's burning up more of his power. So
yeah, and it's ballsy, I think, to have. I mean, they've got a very specific number here.
Yeah.
So they've obviously plotted it out to how what's going to happen quite a few issues down,
yeah,
in order to incorporate this countdown. So it's a big move to have a countdown in a comic, unless of course it's just your typical bomb's going to go off in 3 seconds rubbish. Overall, I mean, I enjoyed it. It's solid. I mean, it does what it has to do, and I mean, I've always liked Captain Atom as a character, so I gave it 3 looks.
I agree pretty much with what everyone said. I love the fact that he draws Captain Atom a little bit differently to the rest of the scene that he's in. There's a sort of more illustrative Francis Manipal quality to Captain Atom as opposed to the sort of the more harder lines that the surrounding world has. I think that's a nice way of contrasting him from the environment. Yes, there is a lot of exposition. Having said that, it's not decompressed. A lot does actually happen, and Freddie Williams and J.T. Krull try to pack in as much page as they can. Whilst the idea that, you know, his powers are killing him has been done to death, it is better handled here than it has been in more recent efforts like, say, Thunder Agents, which was apparently the whole premise behind the rebirth of the Thunder Agents. But here, it's actually part of it sets up his emotional framework as well, and the eventual loss of humanity that Captain Atom will go through. This is a solid book. I'll give it 3 looks.
Yeah, you have to assume he'll get his containment suit at some point.
At some point, but you know, that's one of those things that's going to be part of the story. So
I like that. I like the fact that he doesn't show up straight away in the containment suit. Although then you've got to think, well, why does the genius Dr. Amygdala not think of the containment suit straight away? But it's obviously been in operation for a little bit of time. But eventually you'll get it. No, I like that.
Yeah.
I didn't mind the exposition. I felt that was helpful because I hadn't read Captain Atom before. But I just wasn't terribly interested in the book. And it just comes down to personal taste. There's nothing wrong with the book itself. It's just not my cup of tea. I give it 3 books. Maybe give it more if it was more my cup of tea. But the artwork was strong, and yeah, it was easy enough to follow.
All right, let's get ready
to rumble.
Okay, coming up next, it's myself with Red Hood and the Outlaws. Okay, Red Hood and the Outlaws, written by Scott Lobdell and Kenneth Rocafort on the artwork. Let me start off with some positives. The cover is awesome. The cover is really, really cool. It's very dynamic. It's very well drawn. I've always been a fan of Kenneth Rocafort, so quite good. The interior artwork also quite good. Everybody's distinctive, and Starfire looks awesome. That brings me on to the point of Starfire looking awesome. Now, DC have made it very clear that if you are not a 13 to 21 year old heterosexual white male, they just don't give a rat's. It's their market audience. It's what they want to market to. It's what buys comics. I mean, this is what they're doing. It's their market plan, and it's no more evident in this comic than it is in any of the others. Now, maybe we'll get to Catwoman later on, obviously, but this comic screams 90s gratuitous sexuality, and it suffers for it. Up until this point, I really quite enjoyed this comic. The prison escape, I mean, yes, it's cliche, but it was pretty cool. And, you know, the Padre with the that with arsenals, weapons, and all that sort of stuff. I'm not giving all too much away there. It happens on the first two pages. It was pretty groovy. I quite enjoy it. Starfire appears, kicks some major butt, which is what she can do. I mean, she is incredibly powerful, and she proves it. And her costume, yeah, it's, you know, it's a bit revealing, but...
A bit?
But, you know, it's just no more than, you know, is typical superhero type fare.
More importantly, it's no different, really no worse than what Starfire has worn
originally
in the past.
Yeah, so that's all fine. I mean, that's what she does. I mean, when she was first introduced, she was introduced as, you know, happy-go-lucky cheesecake, and that really doesn't seem to have changed. Or has it? Let me tell you, dear listener, it has changed. What they have done to this girl is an absolute travesty. Now, I'm not going to go on about how that's not what she was like before the reboot, because this is a reboot, people. Get it through your heads, it's a different character now. Okay, so it's got nothing to do with what she was previously. But why did they have to do to her what they did to her? I've got no problem with her being different, but why make her nothing more than just a vapid, sex-obsessed bimbo? I mean, there's just no need for it. I mean, it's illustrated perfectly in the fact that she essentially can't remember any of her past sexual experiences. Okay, so, and then she comes on to Roy, and off they go to do it. Now, in and of itself, that's actually not a problem. Okay, that's not that big a deal. I mean, she's an alien on Earth. She hasn't been here that long. She finds it hard to differentiate between you know, the men, the humans, and all that sort of stuff. I mean, you obviously would have problems. I mean, we have problems differentiating between different chimps and stuff like that. But I mean, that's basically essentially how she sees it. This is just, she's just here to forget about her horrific past and slavery and have fun and enjoy herself. That's fine. I have no problem also with her having multiple sexual partners. That is also not a problem to me. I mean, she can do what she wants. I don't bow down to that. Men can do as many as they want, whereas women can only have one or two. It's just the way she's portrayed in these scenes, where she's posing half naked, and she's posing for nobody in particular. She's not posing in front of Roy himself. Roy's not even looking in her direction. So what is with this doggy style type pose that she seems to have? It's pointless. It's straight out of the 90s, and it's offensive. Why also do they have to go out of their way to establish the fact that she doesn't have any emotional connection to her past sexual experiences? I mean, just a simple, yes, I like sex would have been sufficient. No, I'm not with Jason. Roy, let's go do it. But they seem to really want to hammer home the fact that she doesn't remember her past experiences, she doesn't experience love in the same way, and she's just in it for the pleasure. Now, once again, in it for the pleasure, not a problem, but don't make it so obvious. Don't ram it down. And I mean, I've already said it. It's offensive, and it's just not, it's not appropriate. I mean, what is this comic rated? It's rated T for teen. I mean, it's just unnecessary. I mean, it's shown perfectly in the fact that while she's bathing, in what is a pretty cool shot, actually, with her flicking her hair around, there's a young boy, funnily enough, 10 to 12, who takes shots of her, proclaims there is a god, and then posts on the internet, hey, look at this hottie. It's blatant, and I've never liked blatant. I mean, I prefer subtlety, and this is not subtle. They then try to, you know, defend themselves a little bit later on, where the post-coital scene has some burn marks in Roy's chest and in her headboard, obviously indicating that, yeah, she had some pleasure in what they did and stuff. But it's too little too late, I'm afraid. I mean, they've basically ruined Starfire for me. Like I said, I'm not a slave to pre-reboot Starfire. I mean, I like the pre-reboot, but I don't have Starfire posters on my wall or anything crazy. But this character now for me is destroyed. And this comic suffers because of it. After the first four or five pages, it just goes completely down there from there. So the first four or five pages, I would have given a solid 3.5 Lukes until the disgrace that is the Starfire stuff, which bumps it right down to 1.
I completely agree. The day after I bought this, I went back to my comic shop and I cancelled it. Wow. That's how bad I thought this was.
Did you do the same thing with Green Lantern? I mean, Green Arrow?
I didn't buy Green Arrow.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Whereas I bought this.
You were smart enough.
there are only two good Jason Todd stories, both written by Jim Starlin in the mid to late 80s, And one of those stories is where Jason dies.
You know, like Under the Red Hood?
No. Terrible story.
Good. Awesome.
They should never have brought the character back. No. They have done nothing good with him. They've just made him a walking cliche.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I hate Batman. Batman screwed me over. Batman is responsible for my death. I've got to screw Batman up as best I can. Scott Lobdell has said that, you know, he's trying to take Jason away from that. Having said that, Jason is still not a very interesting character in this. Got no sense of any complexity, any sort of deeper issues running through his psychology.
They try to introduce a bit of nobility to him in trying to help his friends, and later on, where he goes to investigate that thing for that girl just because she asked nicely, it's like, who cares?
Just not interested.
Yeah.
Okay. HBO does that far better than this comic book does. Arsenal, I think, they ruined before this. They ruined him with the rise and fall of Arsenal. But this hasn't actually helped redeem him at all. And yeah, what they've done with Starfire is inexcusable. Not growing up reading the new Teen Titans and currently reading the Omnibus, I like Starfire. You know, they get us. Yes, she's wearing a revealing outfit, but at no time is she portrayed as being a bit of an infomaniac. She's, you know, passionate. Love is what drives her. Yet she's still an interesting character.
And she at least,
I can like her personality.
Yeah, she at least goes. She in the original Starfire, she has sex with people who she feels an emotional attachment to, and she wants to express that emotion in the way that she does, in the way of her people.
Yeah. Her people, you know, are driven by passion,
yeah,
not by lust. And I think that's the problem that Lobdell has here in distinguishing the two.
Well, I get the strong impression that Lobdell was told to do this, not this was his initial choice. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not the hugest Scott Lobdell fan as a writer, but I mean, he's never offended me before. And once again, I have to reiterate, this is a reboot, so it's a different Starfire. Mm. She hasn't had to be the same as the original Starfire.
I actually have to question that, because in the scene in question when they're on the beach, Arsenal is actually rolling off the names of all of the Titans, including people like Lilith and Garth, who are actually members of, you know, early versions of the Titans.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is a rebooted character. They're clearly establishing that she has that history with the Titans.
No, I disagree. I reckon she's been part of the Titans in this reboot universe. Like, right at the start. I get the feeling they're going to reveal that she comes to Earth, she escapes the slavery, comes to Earth, and then finds a group of people who can protect and help her.
We've got a problem there, because we've got
a new group of Titans.
First of all, we do have the new group of Titans.
Yeah.
And certainly there's no Lilith in that. There's no Beast Boy who is mentioned on this page.
Yep.
There's no Cyborg who is mentioned on this page.
Who is a member of the Justice League.
There's no Dick. There's no Dick Grayson Robin who is also mentioned on this page. So with this one scene, they're clearly establishing that the Titans have a very long history, and that the original Titans group and that the new Teen Titans group existed. In which case, Starfire has been here for a fair while. She isn't new to Earth. This isn't a complete reboot, and therefore her personality is an absolute travesty.
No, I don't know. If that's the case, then the guy who says, Tamarian, how interesting, wouldn't have had that reaction, because if she's been on Earth for so long in action, he would know that there was a Tamarian on Earth already.
But, like I said,
the Teen Titans were public.
Well, there is a scene here that establishes.
Oh, look, I'm not
quite
saying
clearly that the earlier versions of the Titans existed.
It's poorly written.
And therefore, Starflyer has been here for.
It's poorly written, but I don't think it establishes the Teen Titans as we know them existed. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying it's a poorly done scene. It doesn't make sense for the rest of the story for the Titans to have existed in the incarnation that we know.
Whatever your interpretation of all this,
but they have the scene. Proves that.
It doesn't prove that. Then
who is Dick, Garth, Dustin, Vic, Lilith, or Garth?
They're the Titans.
Can we agree?
Okay, fanboys, can we just, you know, keep it down to a minimum here? You know, people trying to sleep.
Yeah, just agree to disagree, and let's get Luke's rating.
Okay, look, whatever your interpretation of this, this is a zero Luke for me.
Cool.
This is, without a doubt.
Not even half a Luke for the cool cover?
No. Just travesty. Zero Lukes.
Putting aside all the Starfire stuff, because I can't say anything more that hasn't already been said, let's just say I agree. I don't want to go through and repeat all the points. I disagree with the opening sequence, just purely because I'm not a really big military action fan, but also I found it a little hard to follow, not knowing who the characters were to begin with. But I do agree, up until the point the Starfighter appears, it could have been just a... I mean, it could have got better from then on, but it got worse. So I give it zero Lukes.
Richard?
Okay, my... Ignoring just for a second my complaints about that Starfighter scene, my biggest problem with this book is that effectively you've got a complete moron, a nymphomaniac, and an arrogant scumbag as your main characters. There's nothing likable about them at all. There's nothing to hook me in and say, I want to read about these characters. But worse yet, I mean, look, unlikable characters is something you get in stories sometimes, and I fully accept that, but the characters have to be interesting at least. And this book fails miserably. It is trying so hard to be cool that it forgets that it has to be interesting at the same time. And this to me reads like the absolute worst of, you know, of the 90s, you know, TNA action type books that were just absolutely killed the industry at the time. And this is just a throwback to that. There's just nothing about this book, from a story perspective, that is worth reading at all. Kenneth Rocafort is a beautiful artist. I love the artwork he's produced on this book. I just wish he was drawing a completely different book that I would actually want to read, because this one is certainly not it. Like, when Starfire first appears, it's like, oh, cool. Yes, the costume's a bit ridiculous, but a costume always has been. But, hey, look, she's kicking ass, she's blowing up tanks and everything. I'm thinking, great, this book's not going to be what I thought it was going to be. And then 2 pages later, it's, no, this book is exactly what I thought
as
it was going to be.
As soon as that kid said there is a god, I was like...
Yeah.
Actually, I thought that it was kind of funny. It's just difficult.
I mean, that's their target audience there in the
exactly,
comic.
Exactly, that's why.
Effectively, what they're saying is that our audience are sad cases. We fully acknowledge it and even want to promote it. It is the second worst book of the relaunch to date, and I give it zero. Zero Lukes.
Awesome. Okay, so that was interesting, to say the least, and it's only going to go downhill from here. Next up, we have Catwoman with Crystal.